to you, using that paraphrase, the message. The words are going to appear on the screen before you, and you follow along as I read them now. This again is Galatians 5, beginning in verse 22 through 26 from the message. But what happens when we live life God's way? He brings gifts into our lives, much the same way that fruit appears in an orchard. Things like affections for others, exuberance about life, serenity. We develop a willingness to stick with things, a sense of compassion in the heart, and a conviction that a basic holiness permeates things and people. We find ourselves involved in loyal commitments, not needing to force our way in life, able to marshal and direct our energies wisely. Legalism is helpless in bringing this about. It only gets in the way. Among those who belong to Christ, everything connected with getting our own way and mindlessly responding to what everyone else calls necessities is killed off for good, crucified. Since this is the kind of life we have chosen, the life of the Spirit, let us make sure that we do not just hold it as an idea in our heads or a sentiment in our hearts, but work out its implications in every detail of our lives. That means we will not compare ourselves with each other, as if one of us were better and another worse. We have far more interesting things to do with our lives. Each of us is an original. I really like that paraphrase. In Paul's context that he was writing in when he penned this letter to the congregations in the Roman province of Galatia, the one that they were comparing themselves to, the ones that he was writing to, were those followers of Jesus in those congregations who said that in order to be really right with God, you had to also follow the Jewish law in addition to being a follower of Jesus. They saw themselves as being spiritually superior to those who were simply Christ followers. And so Paul urges them not to do that, not to compare themselves to others. Now, when Charlotte, however, read this text to me some years ago, I was on the other end of that comparison quotient, if you will. I was going through a season of some real doubt in my life, some self-doubt, and I was thinking that I wasn't being that effective as your pastor. Honestly, as I've thought back on that day and as I reflected on this text, I can't remember why it was I felt that way, but I do remember how I felt. It felt like to me those early days when I had first started in ministry as a part-time youth pastor at Faith Covenant Church in Wheaton, Illinois. I was fresh out of seminary. I was in my first call. I was excited to finally be a pastor in a church, but it wasn't easy. There were some nights when no one showed up for youth group, and there were other times when just a handful of students would come, and despite my best efforts, despite my most creative energies that I would put into it, you know, I would hear those four or five kids that were leaving as they left out of the meeting that night about remarking to one another about how lame that was. And I sure don't want to be coming back here. And so in that time of when I was really struggling in those early days, I sought out encouragement. I sought out help. I sought out the counsel of others. I went to this youth pastor's fellowship quite faithfully for that first year, hoping to find some encouragement and some help. But almost all the youth pastors in that fellowship came from the large churches in Wheaton. You know, they were from Wheaton Free Church, Wheaton Bible Church, the College Church, First Baptist Church. And so when we would gather around and we would talk about ministry and life together, all I could hear, and it wasn't all they were saying, but all I could hear was about their great ministries and how things were going. They had so many students, their prayer request was, I need 12 more volunteers to lead small groups of discipleship with my kids. And, you know, I need 16 more adults to go on these four youth mission trips that we're doing. And you know, here I am thinking, wow. I can't get four kids to show up. And so I began to compare my ministry to theirs. It was depressing. Comparing ourselves to others is something I think which most, probably all of us struggle with, at least some of the time. Seems to start when we're very young in life, but it really begins to ramp up when we get into those later years of elementary school or high school and into college. In those years, we begin to compare ourselves to others academically, or we compare ourselves to others athletically, or in terms of looks or popularity, or how funny we are, or how many parties we get invited to. And if at some point we don't learn to view ourselves from the perspective of our loving God, we can end up continually comparing ourselves to others, measuring our value or our worth against the perceived success of other people. And this is not life in the Spirit. Now, the letter to the Galatian Christians is dominated by two closely interwoven themes. The first one is what it means to be justified by faith. And the second one, closely tied to this, is what it means to be living life in the Spirit. And Paul was fighting against those in the churches of Galatia, as I said earlier, that were teaching that you had to follow the Jewish law in addition to following Jesus to be right in the sight of God. And Paul argues, if you read through the letter, that Jewish law has its place, but salvation, right relationship with God, restored relationship with God, redeemed relationship with God, comes by trust in what Christ has accomplished for us by his death and resurrection. So once we put our trust in Christ, comparing ourselves with others, it's an exercise in futility, and it's really kind of silly. Because once we realize that what matters is our relationship to God through Christ and having put our trust in him, we see that all good, anything good that's going to last and bear fruit in the world, it all comes from God. And God is bringing it to fruition in our lives through the Spirit of Jesus that now lives in us. So Paul, as he's writing to the Galatian Christians, he gets really excited about what this freedom means. And in chapter 5, verse 1, he says, Christ has set you free to live a free life, which includes freedom from comparing ourselves to others. Now, I think that's true also in a corporate way as well. I think it's true also when we think about individual congregations, individual churches. Through the years, sometimes I've heard people lament, not necessarily here, but in other contexts and settings, they'll lament about their church. Well, we're not this. We don't have a great that, like they do at so-and-so church. It's easy to compare our church to other churches or compare where we are today with where we once were. But too often, such comparisons take the focus off of what the Spirit is doing in our lives and doing in our church today. That was one of the things I so appreciated about our 75th anniversary, the banquet that we had, and so grateful for the team that put that weekend together, because when we gathered together, remember, at the White Eagle and celebrated 75 years of God's faithfulness, there was testimonies through the generations. And we talked about, some of the folks talked about that gave testimonies about our past and about our history and how God had used that and blessed that. And so we honored our history. But the focus really was about our present, what God was doing now and celebrating that. Who we are today, being alive in that, and the freedom that gives us. In a moment, I'm going to cue John is back. This is his first time doing the video today. And so in a moment, we're going to watch a little video clip that captures this for me. This is one of my all-time favorite movies. It's the movie Hoosiers. And if you know the movie, it's about this little team in Indiana in the early, I think it's 1951 in Indiana, that goes on to win the state championship in basketball. But early on, it didn't look like the team was going to amount to very much. They brought in a new coach who was an unknown, hadn't been coaching for more than 10 years. His name is Norman Dale. And the star of last year's team, for various reasons, had decided to sit out the year. And everybody in the town knew, because Indiana basketball, high school basketball, that's the center of town life. Everybody knew that this team wasn't going to be any good. We're squat, worth wasting your time on. If Jimmy Chipwood didn't come and join the team. Well, Coach Norman Dale, played by Gene Hackman, didn't agree with that. He thought he had a pretty good team as it was.
First of all, I'd like to thank those of you who have made me feel so welcome here.
Thank you. The boys and I are getting to know each other, see who we are and what we can be. So far, I like what I've seen. I'm very excited to be part of Indiana basketball. This is your team. Six individuals have made a choice to work, a choice to sacrifice, to put themselves on the line 23 nights in the next 4 months, to represent you, this high school. That kind of commitment and effort deserves and demands your respect. This is your team.
Support who we are, not who we are not. This is your team. And you know what? God needs all of our teams, right? He needs all of our churches to be who they are, to be the best who they are. There's no need to compare. And Paul says that when we live from this place of having been accepted by our loving God, when we remember that Christ is setting us free, He's setting us free from comparisons. He's setting us free from compulsion to sin. He's setting us free from all kinds of things that enslave us. And when we focus on that, then the fruits of the Spirit begin to show up in our lives. Things like love, things like joy, things like peace and patience, gentleness and faithfulness, self-control. That's where the focus needs to be, paying attention to those things. In verse 25, Paul says, gotta put my glasses on, but work out the implications of these things in every detail of your lives. And when we tend to these realities together, it's a far more interesting life that we lead and provides far greater blessing than any worthless comparing ourselves to others ever could. Early in the week, my wife and I were visiting a friend of ours from the old Hungarian neighborhood. She's in her 90s. She's in a skilled nursing care facility out by Elmhurst. And I was struck as we walked into the welcome area, this little framed saying that was on one of the coffee tables. The sign in the skilled care center read this: "The only person I need to compare myself to is the person I was yesterday." You know what struck me about that was, this is in a place where most people are in their 80s and 90s. Are we going to struggle with this all our lives? Well, maybe we will. It's a lesson, I think, that we're constantly learning. But we need to learn that lesson and be set free in the grace that God has given us to be just our best us, or our best each other, and to encourage that by encouraging the fruits of the Spirit. I want to close with this classic story. You've probably heard it. It's about the great Rabbi Zusha. As he lay dying, the story goes, he was agitated. He was upset as he lay on his deathbed. And some of his students came and surrounded him, and they said, "Rabbi, why are you so sad? After all the great things that you have accomplished in your life, your place in heaven is assured." And Zusha replied, "I'm afraid, because when I get to heaven, God won't ask me, 'Why weren't you more like Moses?' Or, 'Why weren't you more like King David?' God will ask me, 'Zusha, why weren't you more like Zusha?'" When we live in the freedom of Christ's redeeming grace, we can stop comparing ourselves to others and start living as the person we were uniquely created and redeemed by the grace of God to be. Life in the Spirit means the only person I have to compare myself to is the person I was yesterday. Thanks be to God. Amen.